it's not really a good idea to go back on a decision unless God has given overwhelming evidence that one should change one's mind.
In 1 Peter 1, the Bible says, "As he which hath called you is holy, so be ye holy in all manner of conversation." That is, in every aspect of how we live. Easier said than done, right? We have to learn to think spiritually. Welcome to Gateway to Joy, as you think spiritually about the challenges of daily life. Here's Elizabeth Elliott to challenge and encourage us to holy living.
You are loved with an everlasting love. That's what the Bible says. And underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend Elizabeth Elliott, talking with you this time about meeting my husband's killer. On October 6th, 1958, I left a little jungle station called Arajuno with 10 Alka Indians who had come out from their territory to Arajuno to meet us, 5 Quechua Indian carriers, Rachel Saint, whose brother had been killed along with my husband a year and a half or 2 years earlier, my daughter Valerie, who was 3 years old. This was our party as we left Arajuno. When we got to the first stopping place, about 6 hours down the trail, we met there a woman named Maruja, who had been kidnapped by Alcas a year or so before. I talked with Maruja about what we were about to find when we got to the Alca settlement. She was not very happy with those people, you can understand, since they had kidnapped her, but she had spent a year with them and really gotten quite friendly with them. They had not harmed her in any way, but she said to me, "In my opinion, you will all be eaten by vultures within a month or so." Then she told us about the story of a Canadian explorer who had gone into that territory while she was living with the Alcas. His name was Tremblay, and he was from Canada. Tremblay had apparently committed suicide, and they said the Alcas didn't bother to bury the body. They left it out for the vultures. They pulled out his teeth and gave them to the children to play with. You can imagine this was not a particularly bright prospect. And as I sat in that Quechua house that night with my diary, I made a few notes about my doubts and fears. Was it right to come? Was it right to bring Valerie? But I'm of the firm conviction that it's not really a good idea to go back on a decision unless God has given overwhelming evidence that one should change one's mind. As Dr. Edmund, the president of Wheaton College, used to say when I was a student there, never dig up in doubt what you planted in faith. And so the next morning we piled into the canoes and journeyed down the Kururai River and up the Anyangu, a little tributary of the Kururai, which took us closer to Alka territory. It was a beautiful day. The water was beautiful and clear. The Indians fished occasionally as we went along. We saw an alligator and a few turtles. It was very slow poling along in the canoes, and it was slow walking on the trail. Finally, we broke out from the trail into a little jungle clearing. This was that strong city which I referred to a few days ago. From Psalm 60, "Who will bring us into the strong city? Wilt not thou, O God?" We were very close now to what had seemed a strong city, indeed an impregnable fastness. The Alcas who were with us were simply coming home. The Quechuas were approaching those who had been hated enemies as long as they could remember. All 6 of them had their guns on their shoulders, although Dayuma had assured them that there wouldn't be any danger to any who were her friends. Valerie was asleep on the back of the Quechua Indian Fermin. She knew no fear. She was going to Mintaka's house, as she had prayed. But for Rachel and me, you can imagine it was a moment of high excitement. But the greatest feeling was one of gratitude. We came around the last curve of the Tiwano River. There stood 3 naked Indians in front of a small cluster of thatched huts. The strong city. The date was October 8th. It would have been Jim's birthday, If he had not died, it would have been our fifth wedding anniversary. There's no faith where there is no consciousness of risk. Remember that when Peter had to get out of the boat and walk on the water to Jesus, surely he had doubts and the consciousness of risk that he might sink. But the thing which was dominant was his faith in the character of that man Jesus, whom he knew so well. His faith embraced the consciousness of risk. And sometimes people have said to me, when you went in there to those Alcas and took that little girl of yours along, weren't you afraid? Didn't you think there was any danger? Well, the answer is, of course I knew that there was the possibility of danger. I knew very well that they might do to me what they had done to my husband and the other men. But what I also knew was that God had opened a door, that God was directing. At least I felt sure that this was the next thing that God wanted me to do, and so my faith had to embrace the consciousness of risk and the doubts. The character of God is the ground of my faith, not the outcome which I am hoping and praying for. Does he guarantee results? No, he wants us to trust him. And I want to read to you from C.S. Lewis's children's book called Prince Caspian. Some of you that have read it may remember the story where Lucy has seen the great lion Aslan, but she cannot convince her brothers and sister that she has actually seen him. And so Aslan is telling her that she must go back and tell them again that she has seen him. If you go back to the others now, Aslan says, and wake them up, and tell them that you have seen me again, and that you must all get up at once and follow me, what will happen? There is only one way of finding out. Do you mean that is what you want me to do? Gasped Lucy. Yes, little one, said Aslan. Will the others see you too? Asked Lucy. Certainly not at first, said Aslan. Later on, it depends. But they won't believe me, said Lucy. It doesn't matter, said Aslan. Oh, dear, and oh, dear, said Lucy, and I was so pleased at finding you again, and I thought you'd let me stay, and I thought you'd come roaring in and frighten all the enemies away like the last time, and now everything is going to be horrid. It is hard for you, little one, said Aslan, but things never happen the same way twice. It has been hard for us all in Narnia before now. And then they go on talking about it, and then Aslan says, now, child, I will wait here. Go and wake the others and tell them to follow. If they will not, then you at least must follow me alone. It's a terrible thing to have to wake four people, all older than yourself and all very tired, for the purpose of telling them something they probably won't believe and making them do something they certainly won't like. I mustn't think about it. I must just do it, thought Lucy. She went to Peter first and shook him. Peter, she whispered, wake up, quick. Aslan is here. He says we've got to follow him at once. Well, I won't read the rest of the chapter, but I want to remind you of that one sentence of Lucy's. I mustn't think about it. I must just do it. Because that really fits what I had to do when we went in to live with the Alcas. There were a lot of things that could have deterred me. The results were not guaranteed, but God was trustworthy. And so when I did this, I want to assure you that I don't think I was being more obedient than in any other moment, nor was I more in God's hands than at any other moment in my life. He was not more in control. But we felt it, we believed it, and we consciously trusted him for the results. In other words, the danger of the circumstances made my obedience that much more significant, that much more necessary. The possible risks made us that much more conscious that we were really in God's hands. Think about that the next time you have to do something which is very distasteful. Don't think about all the possible results. As Lucy said, just do it. So we walk into this clearing, and there stands Kimmel, one of the men who had killed the five missionaries, standing there in a very nonchalant way, wearing his string. That was the Alka man's complete costume, just a string, standing on a balsa log, declaiming, gesticulating. He had thick balsa plugs in his earlobes, and there were two naked girls standing there next to him, all of them very self-possessed, very calm, as they faced this string of outsiders that was coming in. Rachel, my daughter and I, and the Quechua men who were carrying our things. I wrote in my book, The Savage, My Kinsman, a description of that first scene. Two pretty girls, also naked except for the string around their hips, stood smiling beside their tiny leaf shelters. Their hair was cut in bangs from the tops of the ears straight across the forehead, hanging to the shoulders in the back. I was immediately impressed with the dignity and simplicity which characterized them. Faced with six Quechua men who were dressed in foreign clothing and carrying heavy shotguns and loads, the Aucas stood quietly and gazed steadily. Valerie sat down, fixed her eyes on the first Auca man she had ever seen. I had told her plainly that her father had died, that he was living now in Jesus' house, but I had said very little to her about how it had happened. I wanted to save it until she could comprehend it more fully. Somehow, however, her mind had associated Aucas with her father. She studied Kimmo's face. Finally, she spoke. "He looks like a daddy. Is that my daddy?" So we lived there with those people, 56 people, seven men. They'd never seen strangers before. They'd never seen giants before. I was a giant to them, much taller than the tallest man, head and shoulders taller than the tallest woman. They were generous, friendly, humorous, curious, and unafraid. Valerie and I lived in a house with no walls, no floors, and no furniture. I slept in a hammock. She slept on a piece of split bamboo laid over three logs, spread out her little doll blanket, a little scrap of cloth, and was at home.
You've been listening to Gateway to Joy with Elizabeth Elliot, author of over 20 books, including Shadow of the Almighty, The Life and Testament of Jim Elliot. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliot. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network.